Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez. Thank you so much for joining us. Now we'll talk to Stan Weber, as we do each and every Friday. Stan, good morning. How are you?
Doing fine. Good morning, Steve, Nate, and Jake. Good to talk to you guys today and whoever else is listening out there. Doing as well as possible. You know, the interesting thing about this whole activity we had this last few weeks is it's hard for me to reference where we are in the sports calendar. And for a guy like me, you might be like this also, for a guy like me that lives by the sports calendar, it's amazing that I have to remind myself that tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, should be the Final Four with the NCAA tournament championship game on Monday and maybe even the Masters next Saturday. And I don't even have that part of my brain locked in at all. I don't miss it because these things are so real, so important, so different that, like I said, I live by the sports calendar. And I feel like a retired person who says, oh, is it Tuesday? Because other than Sunday when they go to church, they have no idea what day it is. It just doesn't matter, you know? And it seems that way somewhat with sports not being on. I kind of lose my reference point to what day it is. But I know now it's Friday because I'm talking to you guys on the radio.
And Stan, let me step in let me speak for Jake. It's something that I like to do quite a bit. Jake would tell you that yes, this was supposed to be Final Four week, and yes, yesterday was supposed to be opening day, but Jake will remind you that this weekend powers on with a two-night version of WrestleMania, and so Jake, play the trumpets and sound the alarms, because for those people that are desperately wanting some type of event to watch, some type of live event to watch to take the place of baseball, to take the place of college basketball, Stan, Jake offers you two nights of WrestleMania 36. Will you accept it?
Probably not, because it reminds me more of like the Tiger King. It's a show. I like competition. I like not knowing who's going to win.
Wait a minute.
But this show will include Rob Gronkowski.
Hey!
I'm not against it. I'm not against it at all. It's not going to fill the gap in for me. I love competition where you don't know who's going to win. So almost any sport, you know, give me some rugby, whatever. Mm-hmm. Australian rules football. You could catch me watching that right now. And I might even watch WrestleMania, but I would do it as an alternative to a movie or binge-watching shows. It's more of the category for me.
Will you at least tune in after we talk to Gary Lezak when Jake Pounders makes his WrestleMania picks?
Now that you told me about it, I must do that. I mean,
right.
How can I give a no to that offer?
Well, you can't, and so I'm glad that you're going to take advantage of that because – maybe Jake's picking some upsets. I don't know what to keep asking him.
Well, he's an inside guy. Remember, he used to work for CBS behind the scenes. He may have a script.
What do you mean, script?
At least tell the script. You may be able to pick some upsets because you got the inside ability to talk to some people.
I think it's already taped, maybe. You could know what's happening.
Will you at least tell us what match you're most excited about?
No, I can't do that. I can't tell you one of the wrestlers.
Right. No, I mean Jake. Jake will tell us, and then you can watch.
I think.
Jake, what do you?
Maybe Edge, Randy Orton. I think Edge returns, and I think that I was a big fan of Edge growing, and Randy Orton has kind of grown on me. But when he first came out, he was pretty cocky and I wasn't a huge Randy Orton fan. He's kind of earned my respect. But his dad was a hell of a wrestler, Bobby Orton Jr. So, and his grandpa obviously Bobby Orton, but comes from a long line of family wrestlers, and I like him, but I want Edge to kick his ass tonight.
The St. John boys looking forward to John Cena against the Fiend Bray Wyatt. Also, The Undertaker and AJ Styles' Boneyard match. I know Nate's had a couple of those.
I can't stand Bray Wyatt, so that's.
Well,
I mean,
I like him. I like him, and we'll butt heads about that.
Ugh.
And what about Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre? We'll get Jake's picks later on, but Stan Weber.
Undertaker, AJ Styles, that's a great one, too. I mean,
Nate's Boneyard match, I told you that.
Jake could be, the great story. If he can be called Jake Pounders, whatever he wants to be called. But just think about the big wrestler that comes in and just jumps on you and smashes you to the ground and lays that giant amount of weight on you. And then just a year or two later, he's running circles around the ring, and you can't catch him because he's lost so much weight, and he runs in the middle of the night.
Versatile. Versatile. Yes.
Jake is a great storyline.
I could play different characters, absolutely. I think
Jake's
I
our answer to Paul Heyman.
No.
I knew you'd like
no.
that. And that's what we're going to go with
no.
here. Now, Stan Weber, we have hot, fresh football news for you to analyze for us. While many people were asleep, except for Jake, because Jake does not sleep, he simply waits. Therese Paylor tweeted out and reported that the Chiefs have reached an agreement with Sammy Watkins in a new one-year deal that'll pay him a base of $9 million for 2020 with an incentive package that can reach $16 million. And so not only is Sammy Watkins back for sure, and there's a no-trade clause in that deal, the move creates $5 million in cap space for the Chiefs when they were just operating with $177. I would have exceeded the Chiefs cap yesterday when I went to the grocery store. They couldn't even go out and get a decent meal, damn it, for the kids. And so now they've got $5 million in cap space, and we know that this offense pretty much is intact. They lost Devin Wisniewski, but you got the quarterback, you got the running back, the fullback, the tight end, all the wide receivers, most of the offensive line, except for Wisniewski. I mean, that's pretty damn good. You win the Super Bowl. I know they got stuff to do on the defense, but you really don't lose anyone off that offense, Dan Weber.
Very exciting to have Sammy Watkins back in and to see the offense. All those things are positive. But what this really does, when we get a chance to talk about it today, is does the best job of explaining how the salary cap can be used, how intricate it is, what different negotiating tactics you have. I remember back all the way in history, if you can remember this, when we actually could all be in the studio together, all of us. Jake even could come shake our hand in the breaks and laugh. Maybe less than 2 months ago, we started talking about Frank Clark and would he have a chance to be back. And I think Jake was on board as saying there's a possibility. And I remember right away saying, absolutely, there's a possibility. And the possibilities come under a couple of categories. Number one is that you can work the salary cap in many different ways to make it work out, so you always have a chance if you're creative and you understand what you're doing. You got trade-offs. Some of the trade-offs are further down in history, down the road, in other years. But you have an unbelievable amount of flexibility. And you also have the possibility and probability that the cap's going to grow here in the next couple of years when the NFL negotiates all their new contracts. The cap also goes up when the new collective bargaining agreement went in place because the players get a percentage more of the gross revenues than they got before. So even if the television contracts are steady, the players still get more money, the salary cap goes up. But the other thing that I mentioned at that time is when you're talking to a Frank Clark is you've got to push some other buttons, some things that aren't about money that you talk to them about. One of them that I was talking about with Frank Clark is saying, hey, we've got to take care of our guy, Patrick Mahomes. He's the man that makes it go. You understand that. You got to work with us. Don't take anything we say negatively. Don't get mad like a lot of players do. Don't act like you've been disrespected. If we put the tag on you, those kind of things. You talk it through. You keep the relationships good because there are other things that you can work out. So let's talk about the Sammy Watkins deal. It is very fun and intricate, but not that complicated to talk about. So tell me if you get bored. Just start yelling from any of your three places if
Never.
You get bored with this. But Sammy Watkins gets signed, okay? And, well, number one, he gets a no-trade clause. That didn't cost the Chiefs any money, okay? A no-trade clause was valuable to Sammy Watkins. They found something that was outside the salary cap to play to. That's what you got to do with Frank Clark. You got to push certain buttons. You got to do that with Patrick Mahomes because Patrick Mahomes deserves $100 million a year if he gets paid what he's worth, but he's not going to get that kind of money, and the Chiefs can't afford it. I don't think he's going to demand it. So you talk to him. We've talked a bit about that one of the things I think you talk with Patrick Mahomes about is, hey, do you want these other players around you or do you want all the money? And you become kind of an assistant general manager. We talked about that. We've seen the restructuring happening in New England and that's fine. But with Sammy Watkins, guys, let's just start with this. If Sammy Watkins plays well this year, he has a one-year contract, as we understand. If he plays well and meets all of his incentives, how much money does he make this year?
$16 million.
$16 million is $2 million more than 14. Uh-oh, wait a second. Did they really save salary cap money when they might pay him $2 million more this year than they were going to? Okay, so Sammy Watkins, if he believes in himself, what they did with him is said, hey, we'll pay you more money this year. How would you like to do that? All you got to do is help us out. We'll put a no-trade clause in there, and we'll say you're going to get guaranteed $9 million. Are you okay with that? And he's like, well, I don't know. What does that mean? And they go, that gives us $5 million today as defined to go do some other team things and help your team out. And he goes, so all I got to do is play good, and I get $16 million instead of $14, and you won't trade me? Yeah, I think I'll do that. So Sammy Watkins may have not taken a discount at all, but it creates $5 million of salary cap space today. So if he does get paid $16 million, all Brett Veach has to do is figure out some other things to do. So if it gets late in the year and it looks like he's going to get paid $16 million, uh-oh, he's not a $9 million salary cap hit. He's going to be larger. Then you start maneuvering around and making decisions at that point. You keep the ball up in the air. Maybe you go and sign him to a two-year contract. Turn that incentive part of it into a bonus, and then you can push it back. Okay, so what we're seeing here is the flexibility of the salary cap. Very good work by Brett Veach and the Kansas City Chiefs. Great relationships with their players, but they may not have saved any money in a cap, but they have right now, which means they can take the next step. And it makes it a little more likely that a Frank Clark can get put into the roster as well. And you got Patrick Mahomes and the timing with Patrick Mahomes as well. All this today with Sammy Watkins gives you so many examples of how, in a simple example, the flexibility factor is giant. They found a winning deal for Sammy Watkins. They found a winning deal for the Chiefs, which gives them some flexibility as defined. And they're going to have to make other decisions, but Brett Veach did a great job of saying, man, I just need that $5 million today as defined, and I can get back to work. And you put this whole puzzle together, and there's a million different ways they could put their 53-plus man roster together, and this is just one of them. He bought himself some flexibility. Sammy Watkins may have bought himself $2 extra million this year, and he knows he gets to live in Kansas City. And who wouldn't want to know that they get to live in Kansas City? That's great. So hopefully that made sense. But this is just a classic example of how the salary cap can work. And it's all definitional about the money that gets counted against the cap.
And Stan, when you describe it that way, the no trade clause, if that is that big of a deal to Sammy Watkins, is that one of these examples that we're hearing about of players, I don't know if you want to call it a hometown discount or whatever, but players signing contracts in Kansas City that they wouldn't sign other places because they want to be a part of a Super Bowl dynasty type team?
Absolutely, guys. And I think it's something that we need to really do to respect the players, because I have no problem with us looking at them as pieces in a chessboard or something. You know, we've done it. I've done it since I was old enough to read the Sporting News. You know, it's called the Baseball Bible back when I was a kid. And it would just have every article about everything. And from that day that I first read about it, I knew that the players were just little pawns in the game and that they were just pieces of meat. In the fact that you would say, you're traded. When are you traded? Like in the baseball season, when they say you're traded, that means tonight, get on the plane, get the hell out of here. You're out of here. You're not living in our city anymore. You're moving to that team and get there fast for tomorrow's 2 o'clock first pitch. And you think about that, and we always say, well, gosh, wouldn't we all want to be a pro athlete? Oh, yeah. And then we always say, look how much money they make, at least today. Look how much money they make. But we take away the human factor completely. Guys, just think about this. If I told you that you were going to get paid the same as you're getting paid now, but you're going to be in Bismarck, North Dakota tomorrow doing the show, wouldn't you just be throwing your arms up and going, wait a second. I don't care if Bismarck's the best station in that part of the country, and I'm going to be the star guy. No, I got kids. You know, I got family. I got roots. I got a house. I got a mortgage payment. You got a life. You know, we don't think about this enough. These guys get turned upside down, and we just kind of laugh at it like, yeah, Sammy Watkins just got traded in the third week of the season, and here's where he's going to go. I'm sure he's going to be happy. Well, no, they're not happy. They didn't get to choose where they want to work. It's one of the core basic issues that we have in the United States with freedom, is we choose where we want to work. And I just don't think we give enough credit that these guys are human beings. For Sammy Watkins to be able to walk into his house or call his parents or whoever he's associated with, his neighbors, his friends, and say, I'm going to be a Kansas City Chief this whole year. That's a settling statement that's worth a lot. I don't know if it's a hometown discount, but it's worth a lot of money. I mean, how much, even if you got a raise, guys, wouldn't you rather stay in Kansas City and work right here on Sports Radio 810 than get that raise and uproot your family in a snap of the fingers and have to go someplace else? So I just think these guys are real humans. It is a real value. A no-trade clause is a real value. And if you can make your place a great place to be, Kansas City is a great place to live, and you can make your organization a great organization to be a part of, winning is the number one thing, but also being treated appropriately and being around guys you want to be around, it's worth more than money, I think. You know, I could have left Kansas City and done a lot of things and made a lot more money. It doesn't even tempt me to one degree. I want to live here. And so it's an example of using other things than money. But my whole point here is not necessarily to answer your question very well, Nate. I apologize for that. It's more to say, let's think about these guys as human beings a little bit more and see what kind of value there is to having some stability and being able to know where you're going to be in a business where just because you get money, you're not supposed to care about that. But they do.
Stan Weber is our guest. And, Stan, the important thing here, the most important thing here, is obviously the Chiefs keeping the offensive band together for another run at a Super Bowl. And I talked a lot about this in the 6 o'clock hour, but again, Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins, you bring back DeMarcus Robinson. Mecole Hardman is an ascending player. And so, and then Byron Pringle is your fifth guy. I'm damn fine with that. I mean, I put that group of receivers up against anyone in the NFL, especially when you consider they all know the offense. There's no guesswork there. They all fit in the locker room. They've all won a Super Bowl. And they got the same guys around them coming back. And the other thing that I keep reminding people and reminding myself, because I love looking at it, how good Sammy Watkins has been in the postseason. Again, for people that didn't hear me reading it earlier, last year for the Chiefs against the Colts, he had 6 catches for 62 yards. Then against the Patriots in the championship game, 4 catches for 114 yards. This year against the Texans, he had 2 catches, but for 76 yards and also a 14-yard run. So he was responsible for 90 yards from scrimmage against the Tennessee Titans in the championship game, 7 catches for 114 yards and a touchdown, and had that big touchdown that basically put the game away, and we knew the Chiefs were going to go to the Super Bowl after he scored that touchdown. So in both championship games, Stan, he's had 114 yards receiving. And then, by the way, in the Super Bowl, 5 catches for 98 yards, including the biggest play on the biggest drive when the Chiefs were down with a couple of minutes left in the Super Bowl. Sammy Watkins comes up big and helps his team win a championship for the first time in 50 years. You cannot, I know the regular season is important, but you cannot overlook how terrific he's been in the postseason for the Chiefs.
Wow, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl? Whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad you reminded me of that. Well, I had a brilliant high school coach, a couple of them actually, but one of them is the late Bill Orth, who said, you're only as good as your weakest link. And I was just a young kid, and I didn't really know what that meant, but I've always kept that in mind, and I use it here as another example. When you're playing the best teams on the best stages with the best coaches, it's easy to talk about a Bill Belichick, for instance. They're going to make you beat them with your weakest link. You know, what is the weakest thing that you have, and that's what they're going to attack. And when the Chiefs put this offensive group together and these receivers, and even with those offensive tackles deserving a lot of credit, you have the weakest link being a Sammy Watkins in the Super Bowl one-on-one running a fade route. You know, and you win that you win it because Sammy Watkins is a big-time guy. He has all the capabilities in the world of playing as a first-round pick like he was, and he is not your first option. He's the guy they chose to allow to be in a one-on-one situation in that game, and the Chiefs went to him, and he dominated that play. I mean, it was an awesome route. Now, Patrick Mahomes is good to know where to put the ball and all of those things, but you're only as good as your weakest link, and that's why keeping the whole band together is so important, because they can pick their medicine of who they want to guard, but with this lineup, there are no ways that you can stop the Chiefs. Two seasons ago, I think is worth noting when you talk about this, Stephen, and remembering that season when the Chiefs got shut out in the first half in a championship game against the Patriots. They were just a little bit in shock, and you know, it just wasn't their half. But what did they do in the second half? I believe they scored 31 points against Bill Belichick, coming from behind with no momentum, with his defensive philosophy working so well, and all of a sudden here the Chiefs take off. And maybe a coin flip away in that season from the Chiefs going to the Super Bowl. And why that's important right now is because really the Chiefs easily could have been the Super Bowl champion two seasons ago, even with the defense leaking all over the place. So when you say the whole group's back and how exciting that is, just think about that a second. The Chiefs may have been the best team in the NFL the last 2 years with this unbelievable offense. It's going to be remembered like the greatest show on turf in St. Louis with Kurt Warner and the Rams and teams like that. Joe Montana in 1989 or 1984. You know, some of the greatest offensive teams in history are going to be thought of along with this Kansas City Chiefs team. So the point is, you get the offense fired up to this level, no matter what the defense does. I mean, even if the defense ends up being poor, or if some guys get injured, or you lose some players like Frank Clark, even without all that, you pretty much have started with the lower end of the range that you expect the Chiefs to get to this year is still within the range of being the best team in the NFL. I mean, it's going to take a super team to have some kind of balance to be able to play defense and offense well enough to be better than this Chiefs team, because the Chiefs probably were the best team 2 years ago, totally relying on the offense. Last year, the defense picked up, and they absolutely were the best team. We don't want to write off defense, especially stopping the run, in my mind. We want to be able to stop the run so the other team doesn't get to decide how they want to control the football. But just saying what you did about the offense vaults you into a range of, wow, the Chiefs are there, man. Obviously, they're the best team in the division, and they should win the division again, but they are the best team in football, and you have very easy reasons to point to it, not just because, hey, we got momentum and the coach is good and Patrick Mahomes and all that. The whole offensive team and the structure, the weapons, the weakest link not being weak at all makes the Chiefs an awesome team going into the next season, and this is part of it. So, yeah, I'm so happy to have Sammy Watkins back. Mecole Hardman should be getting better, and then you just go across the board. The Chiefs are in great shape on offense, and football is more of an offensive game than it's ever been before. So you're great at what you need to be good at in football today.
We have Stan Weber on the line. We will take a break. We'll have Stan back for another segment after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us, Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez, and we are now rejoined by Stan Weber, who has been on with us for one segment already. We have one more, and then we'll talk to Gary Lezak and get a little bit of a colder forecast for you. Stan was on. We've been talking about Sammy Watkins now for sure returning to the Kansas City Chiefs on a one-year deal that Therese Paylor and now ESPN.com and several other people reporting that will pay him a base of $9 million in 2020 with an incentive package that can reach $16 million with a no-trade clause. And the move creates $5 million in cap space for the Chiefs to operate this offseason. So, Stan, now we have the draft to look forward to, and the Chiefs will still be, you know, working on the situation with Chris Jones. Who they have franchise tagged, but with the draft coming up, and now, I mean, here in the last week they've added DeMarcus Robinson and Sammy Watkins, so it seems like they're good at wide receiver. We had the discussion about running backs when Todd McShay had DeAndre Swift out of Georgia going to the Chiefs, number 32. Nate liked it. Jake does not. Now that we've seen Mike Pinnell added as well, where are you at with the Chiefs' first-round draft pick? Is it strictly best player available? Is there a certain area that you think that they should focus on? What would you like to see the approach for the Chiefs in the first couple of rounds of the upcoming draft now?
Well, I don't necessarily like the words, the generic words, the best player available. I rarely like that when you're drafting. But I think you can define that slightly differently and maybe be in the same realm, and that is the best player available that is at a position of need for you. So it could be running back, because we're talking about all the money that this offense is going to get, and you think about when Patrick Mahomes gets signed, how much more it's going to be allocated. So if you can get some rookie contract players to play, because the draft pick this year is not really even needed for the Chiefs offense to be great, but if Sammy Watkins isn't back next year and Tyreek Hill somehow gets slower at some point, at some point you're going to need the next wave of players, so I'm never going to get upset that you add to the offense. But basically, I would probably be leaning more to the defense. If there's a player available that can meet that criteria, I think they need to start looking and continuing to look on the defensive side. We just bragged up the offense in the previous half hour about where they are, how awesome it is, the best in the NFL, without question, already with the signing of Sammy Watkins. So, yeah, I think defense would be a more likely way to go. But I'm not one to be able to pick out the player very often and say, oh, that's the guy. I mean, the kind of homework that's being done behind the scenes and what these draft analysts are doing for the Kansas City Chiefs, the amount of tape they're watching, the interviews they've been able to have, all of those things, they ought to be able to figure out who they want. And it's not just who looks good on tape. That's very important. But it's also what kind of attitude do they have? Will it fit in? Will they get better in the Chiefs system? So generally, I'd rather see them end up with a defensive player in the first round because I think that's a place where the Chiefs can make a difference and they actually have some weaknesses going into the draft.
Nate Bugatti.
I think I agree with all that. I don't think running back is the biggest need on the team, but the reason that I was in favor of the pick that we heard Steven talk about in the mock draft that Todd McShay did was the thinking behind it being, first of all, I look at it when you have the 32nd pick, Stan, a lot of it you're not controlling your own destiny, right? Like you're waiting to see who's available by the time your pick comes around. And the way that Todd McShay described this was he thinks that Justin Swift, the running back from Georgia, is a top 15 caliber player, but he's not going to get taken in the first round because unless the Chiefs take him, because a couple reasons. A lot of teams that might be in a position to draft him already have a running back, and the teams that might not have a running back don't really think that it's worth taking a running back in the first round, so he's going to fall. And I don't know. Look, like just because Todd McShay says that Swift is a top 15 player does not mean that Brett Veach sees it the same way. Like that's one of the things I think we have to understand is there's not a consensus on all these players. Brett Veach is going to have his own draft board, but and I trust him and his draft board. But if he looks at it and sees Justin Swift as a top 15 caliber player and a game changing type running back that's worthy of being picked in the first round. My thinking is I would rather him take that guy than say, let's say four or five corners get taken in that same round. And, your first three corners, if you're Brett Veach, have already been taken off the board. I would rather him go take that elite running back than say, you know what, we need a corner a lot more than we do a running back, so I'm going to take my fourth choice at corner instead of my first choice at running back. Does that make sense, Sam? What do you think of those ideas?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with looking at it that way, Nate. I know what you're saying. Where like, hey, because running backs are not valued as much, they don't last a long, long time. They don't change winning teams that much. I mean, you think of Barkley at the Giants. If they started winning since they got him, I think he is just an unbelievable superstar player. I mean, not just a normal running back, just big time, one of the best in a five-year period, and yet the Giants haven't turned it around. You go win more games with quarterbacks, so the running backs get downgraded. Then we look and see guys like Kareem Hunt or whoever you want to reference. A lot of good running backs come later in the draft, so it ends up being a dime a dozen. Is it really a first-round pick or just a running back? So I think when those people say, let's don't stretch and go to the running back position because of those reasons, I have no problem. When you say, because no one's going and getting the best guy at that position, doesn't that make him more valuable? Absolutely, and it's one of the few positions that the Chiefs can actually add to on their offense and go, yeah, we need a guy like this. We could use the depth at the running back and the low pay and a couple years at least of excellence. But another thing I think that's so important to point out is anybody who's talking about mock drafts or any of that, they and even the teams that are paid a ton of money with a ton at risk to make these actual selections, they don't actually pick the best guys just because they selected them number one, okay? Easy example. Patrick Mahomes was not the first quarterback drafted in that year of the draft. I mean, the Chiefs jumped up to 10 because they saw something in Patrick Mahomes, but they may have not had to go all the way to 10 to get him, and he sure wasn't pitched number one like Mitchell Trubisky of the Bears. So these guys make all kinds of errors in their evaluation. So for us to sit here and go, oh, this guy's a, you know, he's the dead cinch going to get it done, I put little weight in that. It's fun. Those guys work really hard. There's no reason why you shouldn't enjoy it. Heck, if you're going to enjoy wrestling, you definitely should enjoy mock drafts, okay? The NFL draft, mock draft situation is awesome. It's fun to evaluate and go through. And I anybody who wants to do that, I say great entertainment. But the fact is, the great general managers are the ones who can pick the guy, the one that's going to be the best. I mean, can you pick the one that actually is going to work in your system, both, you know, the scheme that you're playing, the coaching style you have, the team you have, the city you live in, all those issues. What is this player going to do in real life, and is he going to be successful? They know which one, or they need to know which one it is, and make a great decision. So not a sure thing at all. So I'm pretty calm about this whole thing. I don't have, you know, a giant opinion of, boy, they need to do this or avoid that, or I don't want to see this, because they're very average at it anyway, and Brett Veach, the one thing that he's been able to do is seem to find some sparks in here, to find some guys that make sense. And obviously, we just give him a million points extra credit because he was the one who said, Patrick Mahomes, let's go get him. And that is worth a career worth of making good decisions. But it seems like he has the capability of doing that, at least above average of the others. But I know that the Todd McShays of the world and so forth, you know, they have no magic. They're just kind of working through and working hard. I love the work that they do. But to me, I just kind of take a deep breath. And even after the draft, I rarely do a backflip and say, oh, boy, that was a great choice, because you really got to see them play. I hate to say it, but you got to see them play before you know if they're going to be a bust or not. And that's even quarterbacks picked in the top 10. About 50% of them end up being worthless. You're just not very good at all. So this is not a super science. There's a lot of art, luck, and everything else that goes into it.
Stan Weber is our guest. All right, Stan, let me transition to some college football. And I don't know if we still have the clip from yesterday, Jake, but either way, I wanted to discuss this with Stan about Kirk Herbstreit bringing up just basically warning fans that maybe maybe the college football season won't happen this year. And look, I know a lot of coaches, we had Tim Grunhardt on yesterday, a lot of coaches you know, got mad at that and didn't like Kirk Herbstreit saying that. But again, just for me, I have no idea what's going to happen, and I'm just going to keep an open mind and hope for the best. But I mean, I don't know. I don't know if baseball is going to be played this year. I mean, I don't know if football is going to be back on time this year. And if I said that I did, that I'd be lying. And so I wanted to play Eli Drinkwitz, the Mizzou head football coach's reaction when he was asked about Herbstreit's comments and whether or not there's a certain date that they'd have to get back going to get ready for the season. And then, and just Stan, if you would, just maybe give me your thoughts on, because we already got to start talking about, you know, the further this gets extended, how this is going to affect both the NFL and college football. Here's what Coach Drinkwitz had to say yesterday.
No offense to Mr. Herbstreit, but, you know, deciding who's going to win a football game on college game day is a lot different than getting the world in a panic about whether or not we're going to play a college football season. And I'm not going to get into that. Now, as far as is there a hard and fast deadline on when we have to be back? No. You know, up until I think it was 5 years ago, these guys were voluntary in the summer and playing. That's what training camp was designed to do. Training camp was designed to get you in shape in order to play a season. So, you know, for me personally, there is no hard and fast deadline. Now, I don't run the SEC. I do what as I'm told and as I'm asked. But if we reported on August 5th and said we were playing on September 5th, we'd be ready to go.
Stan Weber, your thoughts.
Well, first of all, I think there's two prongs here, and the second one's the one I want to talk about more. But I don't know, guys. You know, I don't have a Twitter account, so I don't follow social media that much. To me, it's awesome that you get the communication out there. It is awesome. It's awesome you get the news quickly. It's fun for people, but it seems to me that it leans toward mean-spiritedness so fast, and I just don't understand that aspect of it. You know, Kirk Herbstreit, I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt to everybody to start with, because I put myself in their shoes. When Kirk Herbstreit said that, he wasn't trying to panic the world, in my opinion. He was just stating, don't take anything for granted, and there may not be a college football season. It's not like he said, I'll bet you $1 million, you know, or every expert out there is wrong, and I know exactly what's going to happen. He didn't act like he was a doctor or anything else. So people that want to rip into him a little bit, he just said, it's a possibility. This thing could roll on longer than you think. Just be careful. Even football might be at risk. It's not trying to panic anybody. It's just an opinion. Now, he's the biggest voice in college football, but for him to be put out there as trying to do something bad, I just don't see that. And when Drinkwitz or anybody else comments about it, I don't look at them as being a bad person saying, hey, Kirk Herbstreit said this, but let's just stay calm for a little while. I have no problem with any of those opinions. So that's my opinion on that. I just don't think anybody is trying to do anything wrong on that whole start of Kirk Herbstreit to any opinion since it. But here's the key thing, and this is I have a strong opinion about, and a very strong opinion as I hear some craziness, in my opinion, come out. Okay? Coach Drinkwitz said it perfectly. You don't have to have 60 days preparation to get ready for a college football season. Okay, this is, I'm being positive, and I'm also telling you what I believe is 100% fact, that he just said it. We don't have to have spring ball. We don't have to have summer workouts, guys. They could show up on August 1st and absolutely be ready to play the season, no doubt about it. No problem, without risking injury or anything else. Hey, they've got 125 players. So if your guys aren't quite up to speed in week one and they can only play 45 plays instead of 70 plays, guess what? Don't cry and tell me that means they can't play football. Pull the guy out if he's a little tired, if he's not in shape. Let him play 45 plays and get the next guy in there. I mean, we can play football with a short window of preparation, guys. That is the best news. And for us to hear this soft little attitude about, oh, we need months to get ready. I saw some AD said it's going to take 60 days on campus before our players have a chance to be ready. Are you kidding me? I mean, come on, guys. This is an unusual time period in the history of the United States, okay? It's like a once in a lifetime. There was a flu back in the 1900s or 1910s, whenever it was, that was awful. It's something like that. We can get through this. How about this? All college football has to say is if we do get a report back on August 1st is we'll let them practice every day. What a unique concept. You mean they don't have to have a day off? No, they don't have to have a day off. And guess what? They can practice twice a day. It's called two-a-days, and it doesn't kill anybody. You can actually do it. And oh, by the way, you can do three-a-days like we used to. It's no problem. Teams can be ready. Intellectually, these kids with the video games, the high school coaching, the passing games that they're around, these kids' advancement intellectually about what football is and plays and intricate strategies, these kids are so far advanced high school kids know more about how to play football than we used to in college. You know, coverages and blitzes and blitz pickups and all this kind of stuff. We are so advanced on that stuff. Mentally, no problem. So all I got to do is worry about the physical side. Well, if these players just run some during the summer, just get out and run and stay in shape, they're going to have no problem getting through the workouts for a month or even less. You know, I say 2 or 3 weeks they ought to be able to get ready. And if they have to use more of their roster, fine. I think Drinkwitz has it. It wasn't that long ago that the kids weren't on campus in the summer. They went and got jobs, made a little bit of money, went and saw their family, had a life. You know, they did other things in the summer, and they reported back in August. And guess what? Maybe they're a little bit out of shape compared to what they are nowadays, but it just took a week or so to get in football shape. To me, this is a giant issue. The good news we have about football is if they tell us we're starting on September 15th or October 15th or hopefully right at September 1, we don't need very much time for the players to get there. If they're safe with the virus to go practice, they only need 3 weeks or just a little bit longer. All the NCAA needs to do is allow some flexibility and just go back to a common sense attitude of you have a month to get your team ready. You have 3 weeks to get your team ready. Do whatever you need to. These are not slave drivers. They're not going to run these guys into injury and not have them available. Are you kidding me? We got much more smart attitudes with coaches and everything else. The coach may say, I'm not going to have one, two a day. I'm not going to do it. I want my guys to be a little bit more rested. Other guys may have three a days, but they're going to be careful with their players, how they utilize them and so forth. So utilizing your roster more, using two a days if you need to, Drinkwitz is right on it. It's the smartest thing I've heard said about getting ready for the season. All you need is a month or less, and they ought to be able to play at the highest level without the players being at risk of injury. I'm very strongly opinionated about that. You might be surprised.
Sounds like Stan Weber's on Team Drinkwitz right now, baby. I like that. Stan, thank you so much for the time, sir. I figured you'd have plenty to say about that comment. But, Stan, thanks for talking football with us. Thanks for talking about Sammy Watkins reworking his deal. It's a good day. Well, you know what? Every day is a good day to be a Chiefs fan. How about that? No matter what the situation is, the Chiefs are the Super Bowl champs, and they're going to repeat. Let's go. Stan,
wow.
Thank you so much for the time. How about that?
Reminding me that they're champs is awesome, but saying they're going to repeat, I hadn't heard that one yet.
Well, they are. Yep.
You know, I'm surprised we got through this segment without you mentioning one guy's name, really. The Mizzou tie with Alden Smith?
Oh, well, I mean, hey, Alden Smith and the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, we talked about it. I don't know. We talked about it when it happened. I'm just, I really honestly don't care about the football. Yeah, I don't care about the football aspect of it. I just hope that he has his life in order and his life turned around. I'm more concerned about him as a person, not hurting himself or people around him versus what he could do on the football field. But the Cowboys are taking a shot with him. And he was one of the best pass rushers ever in NFL history for his first 2 years. Nobody had more sacks in his first 2 years than Alden Smith did since 1982. And so, obviously, that's why you take a chance on him. But, since 2015? I don't know.
It's the longest delay I can remember, and I hope it's a sign on the most important things that you just said. I hope that means he's turning his life around, and he really is ready to get back to the NFL. So it doesn't matter which team or anything else. I just hope, like you said, on the personal side. But I just want to give you a chance to talk about a Mizzou guy.
Well, I could always talk about Chase Daniel going to take over the Detroit Lions. But that's for another day, Stan. Stan, thank you for the time, sir.
Okay, you guys have a great weekend.
That is Stan Weber. We will take a break. I don't know if you're going to like what Gary Lezak has to say. I mean, you're going to hear it, but it may not be what you want. Jake, is it what you want based on what weather that's happening?
No, it's not what I want. It's not what I want at all. It's cold. It's April, man. I know we've seen.
We'll see if
we've seen snow in May before, but come on, we've been teased. This weather we've had all week has been just spectacular.
Well, let's just find out if Gary agrees with Jake,
right.
and what kind of weather he thinks it really is today.
I don't know what you mean, Nate.
I'm looking at a tweet from Lindsay Anderson that's talking about freezing rain, and sleet, and thunder, and lightning, and 30s. And we'll find out what Gary says after this on WHB.